Sure, other stations promise outstanding content, but when it's time to deliver, they fall flat on their ridiculous faces. Enter LA Talk Radio, a cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to latalkradio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio, we say what we want.
The morning show that's on your side. But then again, so is appendicitis.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Charlotte, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Friday, May 2nd.
Good morning.
We're excited. My favorite day, for those who don't know, after 6 years of saying that, I hope people know. Like,
the
they
weekend.
Really care, right? Yeah, it's like people get up in the morning, they go, I wonder what Sam's favorite day is, you know?
Definitely Friday.
I'm sure people are concerned and memorize it. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the show. We're going to have a great show. It's okay. We have a phone ringing, but that's okay. We're used to things like this because sometimes we forget to tell the guests to turn off the phone. Mm-hmm. But that is fine. We have what's promising to be an interesting guest in the studio, so we'll get to him in a few minutes. We're also expecting a phone call, so I hope that happens. And that's going to be by a mistress. I don't know what Mistress Marilyn means, but it seems pretty good. And
yeah, and we'll find out.
Yeah, the email grabbed me, you know. It's like, so I'll, yeah, what did the email say? Let me see if I can find it.
It was about her book.
Yeah, I know, but they said something like, hold on a second. The way it starts is interesting. It says, your arrival here is no accident, you know. I want to
definitely grabbing to, compared with normal emails you get, I'm sure.
Yeah, you know. It says, I want to introduce you to an intelligent and seductive author named Mistress Marilyn. Okay, so that sounds good. I mean, we talked about bondage and stuff yesterday.
Yeah.
And domination. So you're getting more than you feel of it this morning, yeah. This week.
2 days in a row.
Oh, well, you didn't know what you got yourself into, did you? So how you doing, Charlotte?
I'm good. I saw on CBS News, they have the 10 most relevant things that have happened on Facebook this week.
Yeah.
So they're so stupid. But, well, some of them. Star Wars Episode 7 cast is announced.
Yes.
Who Framed Roger Rabbit star Bob Hoskins died at 71.
Right.
Mean Girls celebrated their 10th anniversary.
Who's that?
Mean Girls. Have you ever seen that movie with Lindsay Lohan?
No.
You haven't seen Mean Girls?
No.
Oh, my God, such a
good
movie.
Oh, Mean Girls. Okay.
You know the one?
Yeah.
Do you know which one I mean?
Yeah, I know which one you mean.
School and really good movie.
Right, like bullying and things like that.
It's such a chick flick.
Is it really?
Oh, yeah.
That's why I've never seen it. Yeah.
Beyonce and Jay-Z announced the summer concert tour. Oprah Winfrey considers Clippers bid.
Right.
Jennifer Lawrence named FHM's sexiest woman in the world.
Wow.
That's interesting.
Well, I like her a lot. I
like
her
too.
She's very beautiful. But,
I really do.
But some people think, you know, I mean, some people think she's more cute than beautiful.
Or sexy, right. I kind of agree. I think she's more cute, but
right.
I think she's sexy too.
Right.
Emma Stone's lip sync battle with Jimmy Fallon.
Yeah.
Willie Nelson awarded fifth degree black belt on his 81st birthday.
Wow.
Godzilla movie buzz and new trailer.
Uh-huh.
And rights battle over Grace Kelly biopic starring Nicole Kidman.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
Those were the top 10 things on Facebook this week.
Wow. Very interesting.
If anyone was wondering.
Yeah.
But I mean, well...
Yeah.
I don't think some of those are that interesting.
No, they're not. You know, I mean, but...
to say they were the
Facebook,
top interest...
You know?
Yeah, that's true. I do think... I agree with you about Jennifer Lawrence.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I know. I've always said that she's very beautiful, and she's got that little innocence about her, you know?
She does, and that's what I feel makes her not sexy.
Right.
But maybe that makes her sexy to some people.
That's true. I guess, you know, the definition sexy, I would not think of Jennifer Lawrence as the first one.
Yeah.
Right.
I would think more Angelina Jolie.
Right,
or,
but she's got it
she's
so
older
many
now,
times.
But
yeah,
exactly.
You know?
But you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well,
like you mentioned Emma Stone. I think she's very beautiful, you know, and sexy and stuff, you know. So, but maybe it's not a big enough, high enough profile, you know. I think they're looking for like really famous people.
Exactly. And they mentioned American Hustle and Hunger Games.
Right.
And the big movies she's done. So.
Yeah.
She fits all of the ideas that they want.
Yeah, exactly. You know, she's a big deal. And it's like she came out of nowhere. You know, but usually Hollywood stories are not like that. And I mean, we've seen it here with guests many times that, you know, it's hard work to get to the top, you know.
Yeah.
And we just think they overnight they appear, and they do to us maybe, you know. But for them, it's
a lot
usually,
of hard work.
Yeah, an uphill battle and very hard, you know. So I don't know, you know. I mean, getting famous is not something that you can predict or anything. And I think, you know, once you achieve it, then it's hard to handle, you know.
Definitely.
That's why a lot of people get into drugs and all kinds of stupid
completely,
things,
'cause
you know.
They don't know how to... I mean, they can't even go to the grocery store in peace.
Yeah, you know, how do you handle suddenly your life changing like that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be a pretty big deal. And that's why I think a lot of them get into trouble. They act out, you know, especially when they're young.
Exactly. Like, I was about to say, especially younger.
Right.
That get all this money and fame.
Yeah,
and,
you know, I mean, Justin Bieber, you know, he was nobody, you know, and then suddenly he becomes this big deal and, you know, so how do you handle that? You
know? He got noticed off YouTube.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's how and, he got.
Right,
noticed.
That's how he was. Yeah, how he was
found,
discovered, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And another person is Lindsay Lohan. She's had a hard time with fame and stuff.
Yeah, Britney Spears.
Right. And Robert Downey Jr., I don't know if you remember, that was some time ago where he was.
He played, it was a sitcom, right?
Robert Downey Jr.?
No.
I don't remember a sitcom with
him.
But I don't know. But no, there was a time where they would find him. They found him once like sleeping in a strange house naked. And he was into cocaine and drugs and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, so... But finally, he got his act together. I mean, he was known for that, you know, like Charlie Sheen almost, you know.
Right.
And now he got his stuff together, and he's doing great, you know. So some people
shows
just
that
fall
can
off
be a
the
recovery.
Wagon.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and so it's funny because I think we talked about it some time ago. This happened like a few months ago with the mayor of Toronto, you know, being caught like. On video, you know, smoking crack and stuff. So now he finally admits. So he refused to resign and everything, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so now he admits he has a problem and he's going into rehab for his drug problem. Yeah. So he's taking
a
break.
Big thing. It's a big thing to admit.
Right. He probably, I mean, because
it takes
he
takes a lot of courage.
Well, yeah, because people would ask, where is he, you know, because he's taking a leave from his job.
Right. So he had no choice to
exactly to come
it.
Clean and stuff, you know, and tell people about it. So you know, that's crazy, but what are you gonna do? At any rate, if our phone guest calls, it'll be in 5 minutes, so I want to bring in our guest in the studio now, so at least we become introduced to him and know who he is. So we have Foster Kin in the studio. Welcome to the show, sir.
Well, thank you very much.
Of
glad
course.
To be here.
Yes, and we're glad you made it right on time. Are you like from out of town?
No, I live a little north here in Lakeview Terrace.
Oh, okay. Well, that's kind of far, though, from here, no?
Yeah, well, you know, 10, 15 miles.
Yeah. Okay, so you're local.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you ride a motorcycle, so you can't give us the traffic excuse. So that's okay, you know, as long as you got here on time.
Excuse was I couldn't find my wallet this morning. I have to go to lunch afterwards, and, you know, I'm going to have to pay. So,
wow.
Look in my pocket, I got $2.
I would freak out if I... Oh, so you left it at home, though, or did you lose it?
I left it in the car last night.
Oh, I see. Okay.
The evils of driving a car.
Yeah. You actually drive too, other than motorcycling?
Occasionally. Really? I don't own a car.
Oh, okay.
But
you drive other people's cars.
I do. Just whoever. I just walk down the street. Hey, you.
Yeah.
I need a car. Watch my bike while I'm gone.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, Foster definitely is dressed like a motorcyclist and stuff. So that's why we're pursuing that direction. And, of course, we know that you did a cross-country trip through the U.S. and Canada.
Yeah.
You've done several of them?
Every summer I go out on a long ride. The book is basically the western part of the country.
Okay.
Last summer, I did. First thing I did was gladly lose a week of my life in Sturgis. If you've never been to Sturgis.
No, I haven't.
Oh, we gotta go.
Where is it?
Sturgis is in western central South Dakota, and starting in the first weekend of August, it is the home of the largest biker rally in the world.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
Yeah, well over 500,000 bikers.
Are you serious?
Oh,
wow.
Yes.
And they all gather right there.
Yeah,
huh?
Just party. I mean, the quantities of beers are overwhelming.
Oh, my gosh. I can only imagine.
Everybody should go to Sturgis once. The stuff, everything you can imagine, it's all of life right there out in
really
the open.
Put together, huh?
Yeah, because you know, in life, I mean, all the stuff that happens in Sturgis is happening right now, but you can't see it because of all the walls and you know, and this and that,
right.
But in Sturgis, man, it's right there. If you love life, you will love
really
Sturgis.
Wow. First I have to be riding a bike though, you know, before I have an excuse to go, you know.
Well, last summer when I was there, because you get neighbors, I'm in this huge, well, they call it a campground. It's just a big field.
Right.
There might be a tree. I don't know. But anyway, some neighbors across the street, they invited me over for dinner. They had a barbecue and everything. And but they don't ride. They just said they drive in every year from Montana just to watch.
Really? Oh, wow.
Wow.
That's pretty interesting.
Yeah, but it's all about motorcycles. They don't. They do not allow cars downtown.
Uh-huh.
Ever?
Well,
just during
this
time.
During the rally. Oh, and the saloons are the biggest in the world.
Really?
The Full Throttle. Most of them invite bike. You can ride your motorcycle into the bar.
What?
Yeah. I know. It's all about it. You can wake up at 3 in the morning and some guys are out there racing. And it's fabulous.
Yeah, it's a rider's paradise pretty
it
much.
Is. It
yeah.
is.
Wow.
It is. It's the second largest gathering of motorcyclists I've ever been to. The first was... last year on 9/11, they had it's called the 9/11 ride, and at the last minute, the United States Park Service withdrew the permits.
Really?
So, you know, every biker in the nation that goes, oh, yeah,
sorry. Yeah, it doesn't work.
And there were 1.2 million.
Really?
1.2 million bikers, and... The DC cops
That's
came
insane
through.
Insane amount.
It is insane.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
I like can't even picture that in my head.
Yeah.
I can't. I was there. It was just, it was wonderful. It was wonderful. And we ended up breaking up when we got into Washington, D.C., but it was just, there were motorcycles everywhere. And the whole atmosphere was electric because we were there going, oh, you're going to revoke our permit.
Right.
Well, we got news for you. These are public roads. We're coming.
Yeah.
We did.
Amazing. So now, how long, when did you take your first trip across the country?
Well, my first long trip was in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
I basically just went over the hills. At the time, my younger daughter was living in Denver, so I went over to visit her in Denver, and then I took off up north to Wyoming and Montana, a little bit of the Dakotas, came down, and I was just, I said, man, this is what I need to do. If I could just live my life on the road on a motorcycle, it would just be the best, man.
Right.
You get these cheap hotels, you're eating corn dogs for dinner. I mean, what's better? You know, root beer and corn dogs. There's a meal.
Yeah.
It's so opposite L.A., you know, because I work in L.A. I work
Seriously.
In the music business and you know, and everything's nice and good, and it's all good. I like it, but, man, there's something about going out on the road, and you're dirty and you're sweaty, and you meet other bikers, and they're dirty and they're sweaty and they're tired, and just to get together, and it's just wonderful.
Yeah. It sounds like fun, you know. I mean, that's the thing I think belonging to a certain group is you know, it's always encouraged and stuff because it gets you together with people and stuff. It's a great way to meet people.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, because I've been thinking, like, how can I meet some new people and stuff, you know, because everybody's busy and stuff. And you can't just walk up to people and befriend them and stuff. But I was thinking, you know, if you go to groups and activities that people do together, then you can connect with like-minded people.
Oh, exactly. And the motorcycle subculture, if you call it that, just cuts across all demographics.
Yeah.
And what you were saying, it's interesting. I if I go to a gas station, you know, right. fill up gas. And there's a guy over there filling up with his car, or a woman, everything. I can look over and say, how you doing? And they'll say, hi, how you doing? Nice bike, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
When I'm in a car and I look over, how you doing? They're looking, what are you, weird?
Who is this?
You don't have a gun, do you?
Yeah. That's true. So you have something in common that, and I know love for bikes is really strong, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it becomes part of your life. You know, I mean, you dress like a biker, you know, you... You probably think as a biker, or whatever that means. But
well, I don't know. We might wait for Mistress Marilyn to talk about that.
Yeah, I know. Well, I don't know. Someone's calling me on my cell phone. I'm afraid that maybe it's her calling the wrong number, you know. So if you're listening, Mistress Marilyn, please call us at 323-203-203. 0815.
Yeah, this biker here is interested in talking to you.
Exactly, yeah.
How long have you been biking for? Like, when did you first get...
Not that long. I mean, I tried a couple of times when I was a kid and failed every time. Went up into my 30s. I didn't start riding consistently until September 2008. So I've only been at it for 6 years. But I've put in... getting close to 100,000 miles in 6 years.
Wow.
Minus 8 months when I couldn't ride because I was in a wheelchair and crutches. From two accidents.
Oh, from being on the bike?
Oh, yeah.
What happened?
Well, the first time I broke my left foot and my upper left ankle, and it now has, how many people do you know this? Uh-huh. I now have a stainless steel plate and 6 screws in my upper left ankle. I think that makes me special.
It does. Anyway,
maybe stupid. And special, yeah. But
when you go through security, all the bills go off.
I know.
Whoa.
Yeah, TSA knows me, and I know them. I like those guys.
Whoa.
And then the second accident, I broke my lower leg and busted up my knee.
So, wow.
You know, but both times I was just being stupid or not paying attention. You know.
Yeah. You see, that's the thing is I always wondered, how do you learn to ride a bike? Because the first time, eventually you have to stop, you know?
I mean,
it's like, let's say you get going and everything, but then you got to stop. You got to keep your balance and everything.
Right.
You know, it's not like you can't make a mistake, you know?
Exactly.
Wow. Even on the first time. So it's got to be hard to learn to ride a bike.
I thought it was. I have no natural talent for it. And I remember back when I was learning to ride a bicycle, it was embarrassing. It took me months to be able to handle a bicycle. But the first time, my buddy Vic wanted the new bike, and he asked if I wanted to buy his Yamaha Vista, and I said no. But he kept talking to me about it. Finally, I did. Went over his house. I'm just sitting in the driveway, right?
Uh-huh.
And his total instruction was, well, that's the clutch, that's the brake, this is how you shift. And I'm going, okay, thank you. Sounds easy. I could do this.
Yeah.
So my idea is just to angle out the driveway, go down, turn around, come back, and see how I like it. Well, as soon as I get into the gutter, it occurs to me I have no clue what I'm doing. I just don't know. I mean, the idea of working a clutch with your left hand and shifting with your left foot just wasn't getting through my thick skull. And I saw something caught my eye, and instead of pulling on the brake, I just rolled on the throttle, went shot across the street, went over the curb, hit one of those green boxes the cable companies put up, sideswiped a hedge, stopped when I hit this brick-lined flower bed. My head hit the other side on the bricks, and I was only out for half a minute. The last thing I remember, because gasoline's pouring down.
Oh, my God,
the last thing I remember, I'm lying there with a motorcycle on top of me, and Vic is running over like his best buddy just died.
Right.
He's horrified. Anyway, but, you know, you got to get back on. We finally straightened up the parts we needed to straighten up. I got back on, but it still took me a long time to ride.
Yeah.
When I finally got the bike, I took the class, failed the test, the motorcycle safety test, with the worst score in the class. And oh, my God. But I was hooked on it because there was this one spot where it just hit me, and I went, oh, my God, I get it.
Yeah.
And how cool this is. So that next week, I went down 5 times, nothing really bad, but my clothes smelled like gasoline. My hip was out of joint. I had a big scar.
Oh my God.
I mean, that takes like a lot of courage to keep riding after you fall once.
Well,
you know?
Courage or stupidity, but maybe they're the same thing sometimes.
That's true. Huh?
When I was in college, the first 2 years or 3 years, I rode a scooter.
Yeah.
And I remember the first time that my friend was teaching me, I think I went maybe, 2 yards, fell over into a car, broke the mirror on the scooter, and she was like, never again are you going on my scooter. I was like, great. I got my own, though, and I fell off it so many times. But the last time I ever rode it, it was pouring down with rain, terrible thunderstorm. I was going down a hill, put my brakes on, went flying. The scooter went flying into the middle of the road. I just rolled down this hill. I was out. It was so embarrassing. There was a fire truck, an ambulance, and a cop car all surrounding me. They took me to the ambulance, and because I was out, but I didn't really know what was going on, too. I woke up, and I was okay. Yeah. And I was just like, what is going on? Where am I? What happened? When was the last time I ever got on a scooter?
So you passed out or something.
Yeah.
You must have passed out. Yeah. Wow.
And then I just got a big shock when I got the ambulance bill in the mail. Because in England, that's free. So,
oh, really?
Yeah.
Well,
I so I got a really big shock when I got a letter in the mail of how much that cost.
Oh, my God. Yeah. No more scooters for you, then.
No, no. It got taken away, and I never took it back.
You learned the lesson,
But you got a good story to tell.
It is. It's a good story.
Yeah, there you go. But and I also imagine when it falls on you, not only is it heavy, especially a Harley.
Yeah.
But it's also hot, right? I mean, it's burning hot.
Yeah, mostly on the right side where the pipes are. But, you know, if you're going to go down, it's best to go down on the low side,
right?
Not over the top. So, because if you do that, then the bike can roll over on you, and it does weigh 700 pounds. And,
wow.
Oh, my God.
And I have learned a very important lesson. In a competition between bones and skin and iron and asphalt, the iron and asphalt win every time. Just take my word for that. You don't have to.
Don't have to try it at home.
But no, right before you go down, it's best just to push yourself off and you know, take the road rash and whatever else is going to happen and learn your lesson.
Wow.
So, I mean, but I guess it's still worth the risk for you, huh? Because you keep riding.
Well, yeah. I've said many times, and it's true. There's nothing. There's a lot about riding a motorcycle that has to do with freedom, and you feel the freedom, and it sort of symbolizes freedom. But there is nothing about freedom that guarantees security, comfort, or wealth.
Yeah, that's
nothing
true,
about
huh?
it. And sometimes freedom is just damn dangerous.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
But the feeling of it, the feeling that you're your own person, you can decide whatever you want. If you want to stop, if you want to go, you want to go speed up, slow down, turn left, turn right, go back home, whatever it is, that total freedom is there. Yeah. But because of, you know, you're not surrounded by anything protecting you, you're out in the wind, you're right there, those, you know, you're on the freeway. I was coming down, you know, coming off the 210 to the 405. I mean, you know, we're hitting 75, 80 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And there are trucks, like, right there.
Right.
I mean, think about that.
Yeah.
I mean, I have no chance.
I know. I mean, you guys are like bullets, you know? That's what I'm saying. It's like a missile.
Scary.
Yeah.
It scares me in my car when you guys drive past.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And so what that does is either you get real good at handling the bike and handling yourself and making your decisions and being aware.
Right.
Or something bad will happen. And like I said, in both of my accidents, I was just not paying attention. But that whole responsibility part of freedom.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you know, we talk about freedom and everything, but really, really free people are highly, highly responsible. But that responsibility factor just multiplies on a motorcycle.
Yeah.
And also things, too. You know, like, you know how when you're driving down the freeway, and you got to change lanes, and you just know that guy next to you isn't going to let you over.
Right.
Right. It's like whatever that sense is, whatever you want to call it,
right.
That just, boy, you just multiply that on a motorcycle, and you begin to predict things.
Right.
And there's no really visible reason why you know that guy's just going to turn over or cut somebody off, but you know it. And so you back off and you maneuver around. And so you get this hyper awareness, ideally. And then that just amplifies the thrill of it and the freedom of it. But
And that makes sense, you know, with someone who's got some experience. But I think the young guys, you know, they just are too aggressive on the freeways and on the roads.
Sport
you know?
Bikes, well, you know,
yeah,
we're
you
all
know, rather
young
than
and stupid.
Being defensive and stuff. Yeah, you gotta drive and ride defensively. I think you know. I mean, when I drive, I expect everybody to jump in front of me, to cut in front of me, and I avoid a lot of. You know, of accidents and stuff that way.
Oh, yeah.
Because people will jump out in the street and no problem at all. I don't get people that cross the street without looking. You know, I mean, you're putting your life in somebody else's hands. You know, how can you possibly do that?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Know you're right and all of those things come in. You know, they tell you that when you're on a motorcycle, just to assume you're invisible. Just assume nobody can see you.
Wow.
Because 2/3 of maybe 70% of all motorcycle accidents are with a car, and almost all of those are the fault of the car driver. And right. almost every time they say, well, I didn't see him. Right. Well, you know, it's sort of understandable. You know, you're stuck in traffic, you're tired, you know, mm-hmm. it's after work, and you're trying to see something that's about the equivalent of the size of a face card. I mean, you
right.
know, you
just, yeah.
so it, yeah, you just have to assume you're invisible.
Right, and that's true, yeah, because I know as a driver, we don't necessarily look for motorcycles when we drive on the freeway,
yeah.
you know, it's other cars.
Right.
Yeah, so you're right, you know, you have to...
And when you guys go fast, it goes, like, in the right in the blind spot of the car.
Yeah, boy, I avoid blind spots.
And between...
Right,
yeah,
you do?
Oh, yeah, you should on a motorcycle. Avoid cars' blind spots. You know where they are. We all know where a blind
exactly,
spot is.
Exactly, yeah.
Why are you riding there?
you know? And even with cars, I do that. You know,
yeah.
I mean, I try to not to sit on their blind side and stuff.
Exactly.
And, yeah, so it totally helps, you know. What about the motorcycles driving between cars? I mean, that's scary stuff, you know. And they do it fast, too.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, all you have to do is hit one mirror or something. And
I know.
Gone, you know.
Yeah, we all have. But
you have?
Well, I've nicked some mirrors, yeah.
Do you have a stop? No.
Well, it's just nicking a mirror. you know.
He's going too fast.
No. Here's my principles for it. It's called lane splitting. Some people call it white lining.
Okay.
And it's actually legal in California.
Yeah, I noticed because cops do it too.
Yeah, they do. It's actually, the California Highway Patrol is real proactive on stuff and finding out about this. They've actually found out it lowers accidents. Lowers traffic stoppages because most motorcycles are air-cooled. So if you're stuck in traffic, it's going to get overheated. And plus, if you're stopped behind a car, that car coming up behind you just might not see it.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But personally, my limit is if the traffic's going 30 or 35 miles an hour or faster, I don't do it.
Yeah.
I'll just pull in. I'm not going to be crazy about it. But if it's under that, and it depends on the character of the traffic. And when you have two freeways coming together, you know, like the 10 and the 405. I mean,
that
alone. You can be in a tank and you're putting your life in danger.
That's true, huh?
But so, you know, I just don't bother doing it then because everybody's looking around, changing lanes and stuff. But it's good. I didn't split any lanes coming down here today. I didn't think I needed to.
Cool.
But it's cool. It does get. I remember the first time my older daughter rides, and we were up on the 91. I think we were going out to Ortega Highway. And, we just got on the freeway and it was just stopped. So, you know, I pulled up next to her and I said, so you want to, she hadn't been riding that long. I said, so you want a lane split? And she goes, okay, sure. You know? So we started splitting lanes and the traffic's not going. I mean, they're basically stopped going 5 miles an hour, but we got down about a mile, half a mile. And I finally pulled over in front of somebody. She pulled over next to me. She had a look on her face like, oh my God.
You know,
cause you're missing cars by that much.
You really do.
You know, like I said, I don't do it when I'm fast. I see the sport bike guys do it.
Yeah.
You know, but and then I just think, well, you know, we were all young and stupid at one time, so
that's true.
You know, but still, it's I don't know. It's just not good.
So I mean, we're sitting here and assuming, but you ride a Harley, right?
I ride a Harley. I have a 2000 Harley Davidson Softail Deuce called the Beast.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Sounds scary, man. The Beast.
Right.
Yeah. So now, how did you become interested? I mean, this is later in life. You just started in 2011. You said to ride. How do you decide later in life? I want
to ride. Well, 2008.
2008. Sorry.
Yeah. It was. You know, my wife passed away at the end of 2004, and I just. I tell you, it's the worst thing. It's your worst nightmare. It was just.
Wow.
But, you know, I started getting back to work. I was going out on dates. I had a girlfriend for a while, and everything was fine. But there was just something missing in my life. I didn't know what it was. And I just wanted something that just – I didn't know what it was. Something or something to do, somewhere to go, somewhere to be, or whatever. And then finally Vic talked me into buying his motorcycle. And then that one afternoon on the motorcycle safety course, I had one instructor who was a great guy. And the other instructor was a serious jerk, you know, and he would just bark at everybody. He would make fun of people. These people are trying to learn how to make motorcycles. Why are you laughing at them?
Right.
You know, turning around, making jokes around them. And anyway, and so he was really pissing me off. And in this one exercise, he just made, he says, nobody shifts into third gear. Anybody shifts into third gear gets kicked out of the class and you don't get a refund.
Really?
So I was hot. It was September. I mean, I was just, and he's yelling at people, and it's just pissing me off. And I got to the side, and I said, you know what? Screw that guy. And I shifted into third.
Why didn't he want you to?
I don't know. It's part of the thing.
To show whether you can ride slowly, right, or something.
Yeah, riding slower is much more difficult than riding fast. Mostly, I think he just wanted to be a jerk. It actually isn't a thing. There's only there's another exercise, and what it said in there, and I read it. It says this is the only exercise where you can go into third gear. But it said that in other exercises. But there was no reason for him to. Anyway, I shifted in third gear, so I'm in a little Kawasaki 250, you know. Uh-huh. Oh, boy. And going all of 25, 30 miles an hour, and I shifted into third, and then it hit me. I went, oh, my God, this is it. This is it.
Really?
This is it. And the thrill never goes. I get a big smile on my face just pulling out of the driveway.
Wow.
Yeah. It's you guys should do it.
I know. I'm just scared, man. But, you know, because, I mean, one of my former co-hosts, actually, she wanted to take a lesson or something. It fell on her. She broke her foot and her ankle, you know, and for months she was suffering from this. So I thought, you know, is it really worth it? You know,
yeah.
I guess it is. Yeah.
I guess
it depends who you are, right?
Yeah. Well, you know what? Bones heal, skin grows back, you know, and you get over the embarrassment.
It's true. Bones heal, skin grows back. That's true.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, you're
incapacitated.
Decapitated.
Well, I don't know if your head's going to grow back. Where are you going with this, Sam?
No, but I mean, you're incapacitated for so long, you know, that I don't know that it's worth it.
I was in a wheelchair and on crutches for 4 months, and it's not fun.
No, it's not. I mean, but you have it. I mean, it's in your blood now, so I guess you can't imagine your life without
and
it.
And I'm much more aware, much smarter now. But still, you know, it's a thing. But, you know, that's part of the thrill.
Yeah.
Look, why do guys play hockey? I mean, why do guys play in the NBA? Why do people football? I mean, how many?
Yeah.
Why do people do this? Why do they surf? Why do they bungee jump? Why do they base jump?
Yeah.
I mean, all of these things. Well, why do they do it?
That's true.
Well, for me, my answer is it's real simple. It's freedom.
Yeah. Adrenaline.
You know,
even his shit says freedom.
Yeah. and you're willing to go for that.
Yeah.
And maybe it's to prove something to yourself that, you know, I can do this, or I have the courage to face this. I can confront this, and whatever it is, it doesn't matter, because it's that freedom urge, which I think is in everybody, is just strong and it cannot be quenched.
Yeah.
And it's a way to, you know, look, we're in a room here with air conditioning. How hot is it outside? 85 right now?
Right,
80.
Something like that.
And we have water. You gave me bottled water. I didn't even have to pay for it. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
No,
it's
you're 86. Good.
Well, next time we'll charge you.
And then, these are ways to go out and just get in touch with that primal urge and do something that you're not supposed to do.
Yeah.
You know, because if you're thinking about safety and comfort and, you know, being all good and everything.
You never experience anything
No, right? You're never going to play hockey.
Right.
You know, you're not even going to go ice skate.
Yeah.
you know, and you're not going to ride a motorcycle. So it's, and you feel that when you get around other bikers. I mean, biker bars are amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. Sometimes when I see all the bikes outside, I'm thinking, they must have so much fun there, you know.
Uh-huh.
There and stuff. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Live music and everything, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, usually.
Cool. Well, for those of you just joining us, we're talking to Foster Kinn, who traveled across the U.S. and Canada on a motorcycle, on his Harley named The Beast. And you wrote a book, Freedom's Rush, Tales from the Biker and the Beast. When did you write the book?
Well, I actually wrote it over about 4 or 5 months at the beginning of 2012, and then edited it. But when I'm out, I actually write what are called travel blogs. You know,
oh, really?
I do about one or two a week. I add photos and basically what happens. So it's sort of like a... it's sort of a blog, but it's more like a diary.
Like a diary, a journal.
And so when I go back, you know, I can remember this stuff because, you know, even though I keep little notes and everything. Sometimes I lose these, and you know, and I forget what road was I on.
He's got like a little notepad. Yeah. I haven't used a notepad since I discovered computers. Are you? You probably don't have an iPhone either, right?
I do have an iPhone, but it's an iPhone 4S. I don't know, man. How
Look,
old
they
is
have
that thing?
Notepads in there.
Do you keep your blog written? Is it written, handwritten?
No, I do it. It's email only. I don't do it through my website, and it's email only. It started out just, you know, my kids are going, Dad, really? You're taking off alone on a motorcycle with no destinations, no reservations, no specific routes in mind, and we don't know when you're coming back, you know? So I said, okay, I'll keep in touch. So I started writing them, and then the people I work with, and it just started to grow and grow and grow. And so I've got people in Australia who get it. I've got people in Italy who get them. And then, but anyway, then, you know, I wrote the book, which was a blast.
Was it based on those journals?
Yes.
And blogs and stuff.
Yeah,
that you did?
And I should say, and this is maybe why I'm so interested in Mistress Marilyn, but the book is,
she ain't calling today, man.
I'm telling you, man, you got me. I'm hanging out until she shows up.
She was supposed to be on the phone, never called, you know.
But no, the book is, you know, before you write a book, you know, you have to make certain parameters, like what are you going to write about? Because you can't write about everything. Mm-hmm. It'd be a 3-million-page book and nobody would read it. So, but basically the book is just about the joys of writing, the joys of freedom. There's no sex, no violence, no drugs, no religion, and no politics.
That's cool. That's rare today.
Yeah, which is why the book's only a page and a half long.
So this is cool. Now, I mean, did you have any background in writing and stuff? I mean, did you used to write before that?
I've written some short stories. I've published several articles on classical music. I'm a classical music composer.
Really?
I've always wanted to write. I've always worked on my writing. Mostly my first art form was composing, you know. So
really?
But I'd always wanted to write a book. I call myself a word nerd, grammar geek.
Yeah.
You know, I'll argue for hours over a comma.
I know. Me too. Know? I love that stuff, man. Isn't it true? I mean, you probably text just like you write a book, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I have to capitalize and put commas and everything, you know?
Yeah, I do that too.
Some people don't care. They just put all the
words.
And when people spell your without an apostrophe and an E, it's U-R, it kills me.
Oh, I know.
It kills me.
I know. You feel my pain.
Yeah.
You know, even my kids do it. They'll text me, you know, and then they'll write back, oops, and they'll respell a word correctly, you know? Yeah. And I'm going, oh, what have I done to my poor children.
I know. Let me interrupt for a second because this might be our guest, and I have a feeling that it is. Good morning. You're on the air. Go ahead. This is Sam and Charlotte.
Hi, this is Mistress Marilyn. How are you?
Good. Hi, Mistress Marilyn. Uh-huh. We've been waiting for you, and I know you've been calling me on my cell phone, and I was hoping you'd figure out that there's another number.
Yes, I was notified. Thank you.
Wonderful. How are you doing this morning? Where are you calling us from?
Oh, I'm from Nashville, Tennessee.
Okay. Are you on the speakerphone? Can you, like, pick up the phone or something? Because it doesn't sound very close. That sounds great.
Does that sound better?
Yeah, very, very much. From Tennessee, huh? Is that where you've lived all your life?
No, I lived in Evansville, Indiana, and outside of Atlanta, Georgia, also.
Oh, wow. Pretty cool.
You got a nice country accent.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
The third voice you're hearing is Foster Kin. He's sitting here with us. He's a biker who wrote a book and stuff. And he was looking forward to Mistress Marilyn calling
him. Anybody who calls herself Mistress Marilyn, I am interested.
Yeah, he wants to know, yeah.
It's been a very colorful life.
Yeah. So, that's very interesting. So, tell us what a mistress is so we understand what we're talking about.
A mistress is someone that provides services for different kind of clients that prefer bondage or discipline, sometimes humiliation, different kinds of things.
Yeah, sounds pretty cool. And so I would imagine there's a big demand for that and stuff, right?
Oh, yeah, it was enormous. I retired when I wrote the book, Confessions of a Secret Dominatrix.
Uh-huh.
But yes, thousands and thousands of emails a week.
Wow.
What made you want to retire and write a book?
I wanted to help other people understand that these people aren't freaks, or that we're not freaks, and that there are so many people interested in this lifestyle or participate in this lifestyle that it should no longer be taboo. So I wanted to focus more on the education and helping other people.
Sounds cool. So at what point in your life, I mean, have you been doing this for a while now?
No, I only actually did it for around a year.
Oh, okay. But the lifestyle, you mentioned the lifestyle and stuff. Has that something that interested you before that?
Not really, actually. Me and my ex did practice a little and have a little playtime in our own bedroom, but I never dreamed that it would have ever gotten as far as it did.
Right. Like, you mean be involved with other people and stuff?
Exactly.
Yeah. Wow. So now, it's ironic because yesterday we talked to someone who was, he was the owner of Wasteland,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, Wasteland.com.
Yeah, which he described as a BDSM website. And so we were talking a little bit about this, and so it turned out perfect that you called the next day, because we sort of can expand on this and stuff. So now, I mean, I hear some people are saying this is more than about sex. It's about domination and submission and stuff, right? Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes, definitely. Most dominatrix don't provide sexual services. So they seek out just relinquishing control. A lot of the people are usually very powerful people and in control of everything, and they just want to let go and basically just be told what to do and not have to think about anything, just let go.
Right. Wow.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think if you're a boss and you're accustomed to this, you know, just switch places with your secretary. Why do you have to get into BDSM, you know, to be dominated and stuff? But I guess some people, I think a lot of things are connected with sexuality for people. Somewhere,
yeah.
You know, somewhere our brains are wired to connect everything with sexuality, you know?
Definitely. We're all sexual beings.
Yeah. Wow. So it is about being told what to do and stuff. What are some of the things you tell them to do? I mean, you don't provide sexual services, but it is sort of a sexual context, right?
It can be for some.
Okay.
What I would tell them to do from basically the instant they would step into my dungeon, I would make them strip down naked and fold their clothes nicely.
Uh-huh.
That's just kind of, that's what I would start with any of them. Right.
Wow.
So, and that could be humiliating to some.
Right.
For the, you know, the first second you meet someone, you know.
Yeah, I know.
Get naked.
Yeah, I know.
Strip it down.
Wow.
And then have to, you know, fold them neatly. And if it wasn't neat, then I would tell them to redo it.
Wow.
I'd walk some around like a dog.
And people pay for this.
All kinds of things.
People pay for this, right?
Oh, definitely.
Wow.
Wow.
Wow. It's amazing. Yeah. So, I mean, so you mentioned about not being freaks or anything, but it's also, it's not, I mean, it's not something that's common, you know. I mean, I'm not saying these people are freaks, but it is unusual, right? I mean, will you admit that
well,
much?
Well, we think that in America that it is unusual, but to be contacted by thousands of people in 1 week just in one city shows that it's really not that unusual. It's just more underground.
Wow.
People are not talking about it because they're ashamed or afraid of what other people might think. But the funny thing is, so many people are interested in doing it that it's really not, it's not that uncommon.
Wow.
Right, and that's what made you want to write the book and raise awareness.
Definitely. Exactly.
Wow. So, yeah, because, you know, I mean, the thing is, it is pretty extreme, you know, because I'll tell you why. Because, I mean, you guys refer to submissives as slaves and things like that, you know, and, it's like, you know, I think when it becomes sexual and everything, It's something that, you know, I don't know. People can't like really be open to things like this, you know, because it's unusual.
Well, it's really not that unusual. I can understand your viewpoint because there are vanilla people out there as well.
Yeah. No, that's what I'm saying. I mean, it's not. I'm not saying it based on me because, well, you know, I mean, I can't see myself get into this. But then again, I think you're right. It's because people don't really discuss this in public or to the friends and stuff, you know. So maybe it happens more than we know or care to admit.
It does.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And it's not all extreme. Just like anything can be extreme. You know, some people might have a couple glasses of wine every once in a while. Some people have to drink, you know, three or four bottles of wine. Right. Anything can be extreme. But I never did anything that was taking away from people's breath or anything dangerous. Right. Never left any bruises, any marks.
Yeah.
So I think that there are definitely people out there that go extreme with it, just like anything else.
Right.
But so, I like to be somewhat on the normal side of it.
Right. Yeah.
If there is. So.
Now, I met a dominatrix who has like a regular, what they call sub. And the thing is, do you have that too? I mean, do you develop a relationship beyond this with anybody, or does it just stay within that realm?
For me, when I was in the lifestyle, it was just, I strictly kept it as a master-slave relationship. They never had a telephone number for me. We just didn't communicate or do anything outside of the dungeon.
Oh, wow.
So yeah. I can see how some people could form different types of relationships. And I had several slaves that wanted to be, as they call it, a full-time slave.
Right.
To just live there, do whatever, you know, I wanted, cook, clean, basically anything and everything. But
wow.
Yeah.
Life did not. That didn't work out for me.
Yeah.
So I didn't, you know.
Yeah.
Participate in anything outside of the dungeon.
Sorry.
It's okay.
Is a sub someone that...
Like the slave, like the dominated one.
Okay.
Yeah.
So like a regular one.
Yeah, because they call themselves dom and sub, right? Like dominating and submissive.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. Marilyn, we are quickly running out of time. You wrote a book, right? What's the name of the book?
It is Confessions of a Secret Dominatrix.
Okay. And I see you have a website, MistressMarilynIsReal.com. And everybody can go and check it out. Do you have more information on the book here as well?
I do. There's more information on the book. And in the future, I'll be doing some speaking engagements and workshops as well.
Sounds good. Yeah, everybody check out the website. It's pretty neat. And for those of you, if it is indeed more popular or more commonplace than we think, then I'm sure a lot of people are going to get the book. And Mistress Marilyn, thank you so much for joining us this morning. I'm always fascinated by this stuff. And I've yet to read 50 Shades of Grey, but, you know, it was promoted as a woman's book, so I didn't pick it up. But it sounds interesting.
Gotta read it.
Yeah, but Confessions of a Secret Dominatrix. Check that out. I mean, just the word secret fascinates me there, and I would like to know more about it. So all the best. When was the book released, Marilyn?
It was released September 5th, 2013.
Oh, wonderful. So it's been around for a while. And
yeah,
wonderful. Awesome. Okay, Marilyn, well, we got to run, so thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Of course. All the best to you. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.
Okay, so we only have about a minute left, and we don't want to forget about Foster, who's in here patiently. Yeah. Now, you got your mistress. I don't know if that's what you expected, but we didn't have enough time for that. But I had some more questions, but maybe next time.
Sure.
Fosterkin, joining us to promote your book again. Do you have a website also?
I do. It's called freedomsrush.com. And I'm doing a book signing tomorrow at the Barnes & Noble in Marina Del Rey.
Awesome. They still have bookstores open,
yeah, brick
open,
and mortar,
huh?
And
wow.
Not easy to get in them. But Desiree, I think her name down there is a great lady.
Awesome.
And I have a standing order. You bring me a bottle of Southern Comfort, you get a free book.
Oh, yeah?
Anyway,
sounds good.
13,
do they
400?
Cost the same?
It's at 1 o'clock, Marina Del Rey, Barnes & Noble, 13400 Maxella. Yeah, I'm Fosterkin on Twitter, Fosterkin on Facebook, and the website's freedomsrush.com.
Sounds good, great. Man. You're a lot of fun.
Yeah.
All the best to you.
Oh, you guys are great.
Stay away from injuries and stuff, you know.
I want to
hear some good stories about you. I mean, there's so much more that we didn't cover and everything. Mm-hmm. You know, I wanted to hear about some of your adventures on the road and things like that. But if you guys pick up the book, I'm sure they can catch up on that as well.
Yeah, it's good. Good.
Okay, well,
thank you so
much for joining us. Thank you, Charlotte.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you on Monday.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Charlotte right here on LA Talk Radio.